This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Thanks for spending your Christmas Eve with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you haven't finished up your Christmas shopping yet, there's a good chance you are on your way to the mall right about now, or you're in the parking lot trying to find a way out. Our next guest says there's a gloomy reality, though, that we're not talking about. The fact that many of these malls themselves will soon be shutting down. And it's not just for economic reasons, though that's part of it. Joining us now is economist and historian Neil Howe. He's the president and founding partner of Life Course Associates. He wrote an op-ed for USA Today called "Are Malls Becoming Extinct?" Neil, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Great to be here.
Well, do we have that right? A lot of malls are going to be shutting down soon?
Well, they've already been shutting down. There's actually only been one mall built in the United States since the beginning of the Great Recession. And in earlier decades, as many of us remember, earlier in the post-war era, every year we were building sometimes hundreds of malls across America. By one estimate, 1,000 of America's 10,000 malls will be shutting down over the past over the next decade, from now until the mid-2020s. And there's actually, if anyone's interested, there's a website called deadmall.com, which just has nothing but kind of gloomy, gothic pictures of all of the shut-down malls across America, the ones that have already gone out of business. So it's a reality that's already in play, and now we're really sort of investigating kind of why it's happening and where malls are going.
We'll tweet that site to Central Time WPR, the deadmall.com site. We'll put a link there. Well, let's talk about why you write about economic and cultural reasons. Let's tease out some of the economics here first. We, every year around this time, we in the media obsess over holiday shopping numbers, sales numbers, but it's not one size fits all. Malls in particular are seeing worse sales. They're in more dire straits than the rest of the stores out there. Is that right?
Part of the story with malls is kind of the story of our overall economy and society over the past decade. Particularly if you look since 2007, 2008, there are some malls which continue to do well, and in general, they are the malls which, before the Great Recession, were selling the most per square foot. In other words, these were the most successful malls. These targeted generally consumers in the $100,000 plus income bracket. Those malls, on the other hand, that did not do that were on the other side of the economic divide, have done worse. And obviously, we've got a lot of Americans who've doing a little bit less, shopping at the Gap or Penny's or Macy's and doing it at Walmart and other places, which were probably less likely to be in malls. So part of this story is an economic gap. Part of the story, though, is generational and an age gap. Increasingly, malls are targeting not only an affluent consumer, but an older consumer. These are often boomers or even, the pre-boomer silent generation, who generally are pretty well off today. And they were used to going to They're very used to going to malls. The first malls started up a much great fanfare as the symbol of America's future in the late 1950s and early 1960s. And these are generations which have very positive association with malls, and eventually, of course, raise their kids in malls. So there's a story too of what's happened to the economy. I would say that The generation that probably was most greatly influenced by malls in their childhood is probably Generation X, mm-hmm. Born in the 1960s and 70s. And by that time, malls were being turned into kind of experience lifestyle centers. You didn't just shop there. You danced. You went to movies. You entertained yourself. And these kids spent a lot of their childhood hanging out there. Very interesting. Two things are happening. X's, as they are growing older, and of course now Generation X are now the, parents and on the verge of midlife now, and they are the major retail shoppers. They are economically hard pressed, and they are moving, of course, to digital. They're moving to the e-tailers. They're moving to the power centers, the factory outlets, the category killers. So they're moving to places that either can, you know, a physical place that can, that's really not so much a mall experience, but a lowest priced experience, where they're moving to, you know, they're moving to Amazon and all the e-tailers.
I want to jump in on the generational story for a minute, though. I mean, you mentioned my generation, Generation X, spending time at malls, and it was an activity. Going to the mall, it was a bit of a drive for me. It was in a rural area, but it was a thing people did. The kids, the teenagers, met up in a mall and hung out there all day. Whether or not we bought that much is another story. You say that's going away with current generations,
going,
even going to the mall to not
away,
spend money.
That's going away for millennials. In other words, the kids born since the early to mid-1980s, these younger kids now even in their 20s, spent much less of their childhood in malls. And in fact, you can actually see this. You're interested. This is part of the Monitoring the Future project, which actually has been asking this question of high school seniors since the late 1970s. And actually, there's about one third decline in the share of kids who say they frequently go to malls. There's about a 50% rise in the share of kids who say they never go to malls. Part of the issue now is that kids are busier now. They don't have time to hang out at malls. They're busier studying. They're busier with their scheduled activities. And their parents are much more protective of kids. You know, a lot of Xers hang out at malls because their kids really didn't care where they were during most of the day. That's really changed now that Xers are parents, right? And who absolutely want to know where their kids are every hour of the day. So that's part of the interesting change here is that the younger people are going less. You know, the youth, teens, early 20s are going less to the malls, even while the parents themselves, for economic reasons, are kind of shifting their own, buying patterns elsewhere.
So you mentioned part of that money now for the Generation Xers and our offspring is going online, and part of it is going to the big box stores. That seems like it's taking over the physical and economic real estate that the malls used to occupy. Can you talk about that transition a little?
Yeah, and that's a big war going on now because, of course, the big box stores are themselves under attack, waging a desperate war of survival with the e-tailers. So you see, Best Buy Best Buy is obviously still around, but some of the others like Circuit City have gone down. These used to be and still are what we call category killers, right? I mean, they're these huge stores which have all kinds of stuff in them. But they are feeling the heat, and this is the war of what's called bricks versus clicks. And for a long time, it was thought that these big physical stores were doomed, but now they're beginning to fight back with in-store analytics and all kinds of ways of offering you promotions and so on in your cell phones and giving you all kinds of special ways of analyzing how people move around in their stores. It's interesting now the physical stores now have ways of actually tracking what's going on with the shoppers inside their physical, retail outlets in ways that allow them to gain some of the informational advantages that the Amazon.coms had. But it's a brutal contest between these two. Malls are kind of out to one side. I think malls are becoming increasingly, again, lifestyle centers. They're focusing more on things that you have to be there to do things, cutting your hair, getting a doctor's visit. They're even leasing spaces out now to churches, art shows, walkathons, bands. Increasingly, the mall is a place where you do things, again, where your physical presence is required. In my opinion, the long-term future of the mall in the hands of the millennials will be turning malls back into sort of almost quasi-community centers where we do, community-oriented things. And it's less a place where you buy and sell, more a place where you do things together or have services provided for you, often in groups, where you just got to be there.
It sounds a little like what a lot of downtowns were trying to do when their business was taken away by malls, trying to make themselves gathering points and community events to try to lure people down there.
And to some extent, that's working. That has worked. And you see one of the biggest gains in real estate you know, construction, housing unit construction, are multi-unit dwellings in core urban areas where a lot of young people are flocking, young professionals are flocking. Just look at the incredible boom in micro apartments, for instance, sort of, you know, gentrified micro apartments where young people don't have to have cars and they can move in and they can work there. And I think that helps. There will always be a place for the mall, though, because it's either inner or outer suburban, and these are places where people will raise their families. The one problem with core urban areas is that people always associate them. Even though these urban areas are much safer than they used to be, the crime rates are way down, no one really wants to raise, most people don't want to raise families there, so they will move out to do that. So I think you will find some renaissance in sort of these neo-urban, you know, mixed-use inner-city areas. But I think you will also see this new concept of the mall, again, less oriented toward just, you know, picking up all your all the stuff you need, and more oriented kind of revitalizing a real sense of community. And I think that is something, by the way, that millennials really are looking for. If we know anything about them and their attitudes toward what they want in America for the future, it is a greater sense of community. And you certainly do see that in their voting behavior, among other things.
We're talking with Neil Howe about the future of the shopping mall. And we want to hear from you. Do you still shop at the old-fashioned shopping mall? What about it keeps bringing you back, or why don't you go? And are you one of these people who grew up hanging out at the mall with your friends? Do you drop your kids off there now? Would you? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email talk@wpr.org. We're talking with Neil Howe about the tough outlook for U.S. shopping malls. Hundreds of them, he says, expected to close over the next decade. And we're taking your calls, too. Do you still go to the mall? Why or why not? Do you have fond memories of shopping there, maybe when the malls first came into being, or hanging out as a kid, as a teenager? Do you take your kids there and drop them off and let them hang out with their friends like we used to? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Neil, you mentioned earlier, one of the exceptions is the upscale mall. Can you paint us a picture of what kind of stores are there, what the experience is like for these malls catering to people earning in the six digits?
Well, these are, we have a great example in the greater D.C. area, which is Tyson's Corner and Tyson's Galleria. I mean, these are the Nordstrom's and the L.L. Beans and we all know what brands are being sold there, and they're trendy, they're high status brands, and again, the typical customer is older. The typical consumer is older. I think one of the things that people don't realize is happening in America today is that wealth and income is, they're kind of generational drivers for this, but wealth and income is shifting up the age scale. So, you know, it's one of the most notable findings of the Fed Survey of Consumer Finances that came out in 2010 was for the first time, households in the 75-plus age bracket, this 75-plus, had the highest median net worth for the first time ever. Back in the 1960s, this age bracket had the lowest. So you can see there's a shift. We see a record number of grandparents taking over custody for their grandchildren. They're paying for the extended family vacations. They're starting college trust funds for their grandkids. They have a lot more money to spend, and they're looking at their kids who don't have as many jobs, don't have as many opportunities. Interestingly, since the last peak of employment at the end of 2007, and I think that month was something like November or December of 2007, the overall economy has lost 3 million jobs, but that's 6 million job loss under age 60 and 3 million more jobs for people over age 60.
Wow.
Right? So these are boomers who are just aging, you know, working in place. They're not retiring. And they are increasingly the ones going out. They're eating out. They're They have expense accounts. They're going to the restaurants, the better restaurants in the mall. They're buying stuff. They're buying stuff not just for themselves, but for their kids. And as you know, a lot more of these 20-something kids are living at home in multi-generational families, right? That is also returning to America today, partly because in some cases their kids can't find jobs. I think in some cases because they simply get along really well now. Boomers get along very well with their first-wave millennial kids. They often watch the same movies, listen to the same songs, wear the same brand-name clothing. So I think you're seeing a real shift from what we used to consider the traditional pattern, which was, you know, older people aren't as well off, younger people, you know, prime age, working adults, you know, went to the malls, did all the shopping. All of that is really beginning to shift. And I think this is in any way particularly interesting for Gen Xers. I don't know, many of them may recall kind of a film producer, Kevin Smith, Rob. I don't know if you remember.
Sure.
But he produced the movie Clerks and then Mallrats. Do you remember Mallrats?
I do. I want to jump in, Neil, because we've got full phone lines and not too much time left. We've got Jack Jack with us in Eau Claire. Jack, hi.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. It's interesting. I'm a 70-year-old male, and so I've experienced the whole gamut of the malls. And at one time, when they first arrived and prospered and grew, they were great shopping destinations. And, of course, as you guys mentioned, they became social centers for kids later on. Now, for me as a 70-year-old, they're just a great place to go and get walking exercise in the winter. They're not a shopping destination at all because the digital age has changed all of that. From my perspective, you go out and find what you want on the internet, refine what it is with its features, and then search for where you're going to get the best deal, whether you want to pay shipping or if you can find it locally in some store. It doesn't have to be a mall where you don't have to pay shipping and taxes are cheaper.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Jack. Neil, a common story there, I bet.
That's the nightmare of all the brick-and-mortar stores. It's called showrooming. And you walk in and you look around. You see all these. You can actually pick up and feel and look at all these interesting electronic products that we'd be looking at. Then you whip out your cell phone and you look and say, gee, I wonder where I can buy this cheapest. So the ultimate horror story are the reports from many stores that people are actually buying the product from Amazon or from an e-tailer. Well, they're actually in the store handling the good that's on the shelf, right? So,
we'll go back. Thanks for the call, Jack. We've got Tom in Madison now. Tom, hi.
Hi. I guess my comment is basically, or question is the same as the previous caller. And I work part-time at a retail store in a mall. And what I hear is that what the retailers are pushing for is more online sales, so they don't have to pay their employees to sell and pay them commission, and that we would end up just being there to show people products. They would go home and buy them online. I'm just wondering what you think of that, and I will hang up and listen.
Thank Interesting. You. So the store is trying to drive online sales from their own online entity there, Neil.
No, and I think that's true. One of the problems with bricks and mortar is that it's obviously very expensive to actually maintain a store, a physical store. And if you're also right, if you're paying commissions to actual store people and all that, rather than just having it all digital, how do you afford that? How do you afford all that extra money from a business point of view that you're spending? One of the things you do is you can offer extra in-person services. For instance, if you take a look at stores now that are offering electronic products, this is, for instance, what with the Geek Squad, for instance, at Best Buy. But for instance, you offer all kinds of ways of helping people install products. You recommend, you know, ideal ways of putting systems together. You try to leverage as much as possible the advantages of the personal experience and the personal advice and counseling. And arguably in the area sometimes of, you know, setting up a home theater in the electronic area, that can actually work. And there's stores that make that system work. But it puts a tremendous pressure on other stores. And I think the other thing you can do as a mall is make it an experience to give you other reasons to go there. But again, it's very hard to prevent people from actually going in, looking at the product, and buying it elsewhere. In terms of lack of taxation, as you know, the federal government is moving to sort of level the playing field. Now, increasingly, you do have to pay taxes. That's been a big fight, which Amazon is basically throwing in the towel now. Basically, Congress has said, well, wait, Amazon, as long as you do any business at all in these states, you know, even have a representative, you know, even come within this geographic domain of the state, you are doing business in it, and you have to pay state taxes, you know, retail taxes on the sale. So I think actually that battle is being lost. And so to the extent that these e-tailers have a tax advantage, I think within the next 5 years, we're going to see that largely disappear.
Neil, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it. That's Neil Howe, president and founding partner of Life Course Associates. He wrote an op-ed for USA Today. It's called "Are Malls Becoming Extinct?"